session number 27460, reel 5.
Reel 5. You wanted to go back to Pateley Bridge, Mr. Wilkes?
That's right, yes. I had forgotten to mention in my earlier talk with you that whilst we were there, there seemed to be a bit of a flap one particular Saturday after we were going out. Lots of us had passed inspection to go out, and then we were suddenly stopped because a train load of ammunition had come, and we all had to go and unload this train before we could go out, which made it too late to go to the cinema. So that was that. But then a few days later, and I think it was possibly a week later, that the flap seemed to intensify. And the Saturday evening, we had to stay in our trucks, ready to move at a few minutes' notice. The rain was just pelting down all night. We were absolutely uncomfortable, and you know, you can quite imagine, because the cabs on the trucks were just canvas, and the windscreen was just a little glass screen in front of the driver and one in front of the passenger. So there was a lot of rain came in on top of us. The following morning, after we'd had some breakfast, we then were taken over to Bellaby Moor. We had to drive across there. And I remember one of the old army vehicles that we'd inherited, it couldn't even pull an empty limber up the hills, so it had to be helped. And that limber was on the old wooden artillery wheels. Our guns by then had been fitted with pneumatic tyres, so they were all right, they could travel. But we had to keep the speed down on the with the limbers.
Do you recall what date this would be?
No, I can't, but I rather think it was towards the end of October.
What year was this?
1939. I know that we only stayed up in Bellaby 24 hours, and then we came back to Pickering, to Pateley Bridge, and we left Pateley Bridge and went to Pickering on the 8th of November. I can remember that date.
What were you doing at Pickering?
Well, first of all, establishing ourselves into new billets and finding our way around, because Pickering was a very hospitable place. But we were very spread out. Our battery headquarters was in the drill hall in Pickering, and that was where we also had our dining area. Everything was done from that place, but it was quite a long way down to the other end of the village to get to the billets, which were spread different places in pubs. And I personally was billeted in a house. It had been used by the Autocycle Union, or the Cycle Union, something like that. They had a big plate on the outside saying that. And they had four attics upstairs, and they'd installed four coke stoves. But we could only light them after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was bitterly cold while we were there. And they say it was the coldest winter of the war there.
And the population, how did they receive you, the local population?
Wonderful, wonderful. The regiment that had been there before were the Northumberland Hussars, and there were still quite a lot of them around, because there are quite a lot of stables in Pickering. And these fellows are walking about with broken arms and broken this and that. I don't think a lot of them had ever seen a horse before they were mobilised, because I believe they also were a territorial regiment.
What kind of activities were you actually up to in Pickering and the area?
Well, some of the main things that we had to do as drivers was trying to get the vehicle started, because antifreeze wasn't on the go then. So consequently, the whole morning would probably go getting the vehicle started, and then the afternoon was spent draining them off again, and draining the water off. Now, behind the guard room, which was on the corner of the Moulton Road, they had a big garden at the back, and we had a huge set pan, and we used to tip the water into that, and they used to keep a low fire under it. So if we, the water wasn't frozen, but it was better than ice cold.
And put it back in again the next morning.
Yes, that's right.
But you said it was an extremely bitter winter. Did you have a lot of snow?
We had a lot of snow, we had a lot of ice, and as when we did our guard duties, we were ordered to keep on the move. Either the sergeant of the guard or the senior NCO used to come out and inspect to see that we were doing those things. How true it was, I don't know, but I think it was true that at Moulton, one sentry had been frozen to death whilst on duty, and I think that was why we were given the order to keep moving.
And your clothing, your winter clothing, would be basically just the normal heavy duty?
Well, the army issued us with thicker woolen vests and long johns. By the way, horrible looking. But I'm not going to say they kept us warm, but they were better than the other issues that we had. In fact, until we got those, we'd all been wearing our own civilian underwear.
In your own particular billets, you've mentioned that there was a stove which you could only light after 4 o'clock, as you
yes.
said. What were you sleeping on?
Palliasses.
On the floor again?
Yes.
And was it obviously it sounds as though, was it a coal building?
It was, yes. Now, just along from the building, just a few yards really, there was a little shop. And this dear old lady, who was a widow, she turned her kitchen into a sort of little tea room for the troops that were down that end of the village or town. And we used to go in there and get cups of tea and scones and things like that, home baked.
Were you invited into the homes for meals?
Yes, I was invited to this lady's home. Well, two or three of us were. But she lived up the other side of the battery headquarters. Her relatives are farmers, and I was also invited up to their farm on a few occasions. Joined a sledging party on a couple of occasions.
During the course of the day that you would have to carry out your own personal duties.
Yes.
And what were these now? Are you in a wagon or still on your motorbike?
Both. And some of the time we were trying to do maintenance on the vehicles and keeping them going. We had to do gun drill. I didn't have to. The gunners had to do gun drill. As drivers, we were subjected to map reading. And some didn't take kindly to this because they couldn't. They weren't too good at this sort of thing. Because the sergeant that was instructing us, he would give us a point on the map, and we had to describe the journey from A to B, giving an account of what gradients we ascended or descended, churches, anything else, that so that at least we knew what we were doing. It was good training.
Did you personally have to look at after your own vehicle?
Yes, and apart from looking after my own vehicle, I was also training. Well, I shouldn't really say training. There were drivers that could drive but hadn't driven commercial vehicles, which were all crash gearboxes. And this was a problem to some of them. And I was helping some of these to come to terms with double declutching and all that sort of thing. I also was teaching sergeant majors and officers the art of riding a motorcycle and falling off them without getting hurt.
And you would have to look after your own, again, your own motorcycle as well. That would be your responsibility.
Yes.
What were, essentially were the maintenance, the duties that you had, as, almost on a daily basis, I was thinking?
Well, your first duty was always to check the if it was a motor vehicle, petrol, oil and water, POW. That was drilled into us. There's, if you don't do that, you could finish up as one. And it stuck with me. And it's only recently when I've found that I don't have to top my oil up in my car. But I used to go through those things, checking tyres and everything. Tyres used to be done on a weekly basis all these years after.
And polishing and so forth, and keeping them up to a high standard, was that part of the duty?
Keeping them clean, we didn't have to polish them. We had to wash them. And that in itself was a problem because sometimes it was so cold the water just froze on, put a lovely shine on them.
Which particular vehicle or make of vehicle were you using?
Well, most of these vehicles were impressed vehicles. And we had a few army wireless pickup trucks. They were Morris Commercials. And I was very much attached to a Guy Ant 1500 weight truck, which I liked. Now, the gearbox on that was a really crash box in the true sense of the word, but I could handle it, and I loved it, and no one else liked to drive it. The clutch was Savage, and it was the very vehicle that I'd taken my driving test on up at Reedsdale. But, unfortunately, someone took a dislike to me, and they would try and end my bit of luxury. And this day I was detailed to take the truck out. I could not get it started for love nor money. Now, I wasn't a mechanic in those days as such, and I couldn't understand what was wrong. But later I found out that someone had removed the pipe from the air filter to the carburettor and wedged a big sod in it and then stuck it back on. Of course, Mr. Nobody, when it was discovered.
So someone didn't particularly gel with you?
No. Well, in all fairness, I think I was so young that they thought I was a clever so-and-so, especially when I was getting these extra duties, teaching folk and one thing and another, where a lot of them, well, the mechanics were time-served and this sort of thing, and there we went.
The requisition vehicles, how long did you have them before they started to disappear and, in effect, go?
We had those until some time after I was sent on the course. I went on a motor vehicle mechanics course in the February of 1940, and it was in my absence that these trucks were disposed of, for want of a better word.
And you got new army vehicles coming in there?
Yes.
What particular duties, I'm not thinking of guard duties here, you know, as a driver, what kind of work might you be given to do?
Rations, occasionally ammunition, driving men out who were digging gun pits on the road to Whitby. And so you might have to drive a lorry load of men up for that duty. And pick them up later.
So it was quite an active time. You weren't sitting around in this effect.
I wasn't. No, no. One or two wanted to skive a bit and did, but right from the beginning, I felt I wanted to be an active part of the army.
And did you still have the guns that you had pre-war? Were they still the same guns? 18-pounders, I think.
There were still 18-pounders, yes. I think they were the same guns.
They hadn't changed at this point in time?
No, new ones. The only thing was that they were onto pneumatic tyres.
Had there been any changes in the officers and commanding officers of the
Not in unit? The commanding officers. One or two officers came and went. Funny enough, if I looked at my records, I can't remember just which way round it was now, but I know either the first mediums to which I went later on got one of our officers, or vice versa. But I would have to look at the record and see.
Have you any other memories of what you were doing at Pickering?
Yes, I can recall the day when this German bomber was over. There was an air raid warning, and this German bomber was shot down by no less a person than Peter Townsend, I learnt later. All day was spent trying to get the vehicle started. And then we started doing schemes, sort of small manoeuvres, around Kirby Moorside.
What form did they take?
Well, they might take the surveyors and wireless operators out and imaginary gun positions, or they might even take the guns as well and operate it as though we were in action. But they wouldn't take all the ammunition trucks and everything like that. Well, I suppose we didn't just really have them.
Surveyors, obviously they were men in the unit that had this special task of sighting your guns.
Oh, yes.
Pre-sighting the guns.
That's right, yes. Surveying them in.
And must have been pretty highly trained people. They must have had some vision of the land that they had to, that they were looking for, some particular ground condition.
They had all the, at the time, the modern surveying equipment. They could pinpoint exactly where the guns were going to be and where the target area was.
Obviously, it's just that you were driving either a truck or a motorbike, so you didn't get in on the gun crew training at all?
Not at that stage, no.
Well, we'll deal with that later, yes. As it comes into context. But you were saying that essentially you were training in the area, but the winter must have slowed things up dramatically.
Oh, it did. We were doing a lot of snow clearing as well. That was a job. But I think I was lucky in as much that if I wasn't a duty driver, I was invariably a duty dispatch rider. So I didn't have it too badly there.
And what might you be carrying with you as a dispatch rider? What particular job may they have given you?
We had what we called a DRLS, Dispatch Rider's Letter Service. And I would go to Thornton Liddale, where regimental headquarters was, and then on to the other battery, which was at, I think it was Brompton, on the road to Scarborough.
Had your clothing, as a motorcyclist, had any new clothing come to you? I'm thinking of the leather jackets that came along.
Oh, no. I still just had... When we were issued with greatcoats, most of the men that were already in the TA, they had the short, what was known as the mounted coat, which were beautiful and warm. But they weren't really smart as such. And I managed to swap the coat that I got for a mounted coat, which was better because it wouldn't flap out and get in the spokes of the back wheel. I was issued with a pair of riding breeches, and for what purpose I don't know, I was issued with a pair of spurs. But I think that just helped to make the dress look better when you went out. It complemented. So I had the riding breeches and putties, and this thick greatcoat. We didn't have crash helmets, and sometimes I think they expected us to wear our tin helmets, which were a bit of a nuisance because the wind got over them and tipped them back and nearly strangled you. They also, when the bad weather came on, I think it was the bad weather that really sparked it off, they put a maximum speed limit on all motorcycles of 55 miles an hour.
And that was, it wasn't in any way working on the engine to keep it down to 65, we were putting You just had to do that yourself. You had to keep it down to 55 miles. Yeah,
that's right, yeah. Because it was too dangerous. There were so many dispatch riders were killed in the early stages because a lot of them had never ridden. I mean, these bikes, to the sort of motorbike I rode, they weren't all that powerful, but they were much more powerful than a lot of people had ridden.
Did you ever come off?
Oh, a few times. But I learnt to come off at a very early stage before I went in the army, so that you didn't hurt yourself too much.
Did you at any time help the local population? I'm thinking in terms of farmers. Did you get in to help them in any way, other than probably keeping the roads open?
Not while we were in Pickering, because it was still snowy when I left Pickering.
I was going to ask you, when did you leave Pickering?
In the February. I can come to that. Boxing Day 1939, there was a concert at Malton, and I was selected for one of the drivers to take some of the troops through to this concert. The roads were very snowy, and I was allowed to use one of the new Bedfords that we'd just acquired. Open 1500 weight.
Good vehicle? Good vehicle.
They were very good vehicles. They had a... Of course, when you look back, starting vehicles in those days required an awful lot of understanding. And we didn't have what they called self-starting carburettors, as we came to know later. Now, these Bedfords all came with a self-starting carburettor, which also included an Arctic start, and they were excellent because it would start in any weather.
So you'd gone past the stage of having the handle, the starting handle?
Yes. When these new Bedfords arrived, we were told we were not allowed to touch them until someone from Bedfords had been out and given us some instruction on them. And of course, I was allocated one of these and listened to everything with great interest to what I was told. And, of course, we were told we were not to try and start them by handle. We must use the electric starter, self-starter, and they would start, and they did.
Coming to Christmas, your first Christmas in the regular army, really.
Yes.
Were you in camp at that time, or did you go home?
I rather think possibly a few married men might have got a Christmas leave. Of course, I wouldn't qualify. I was too young for a start off. But no, Christmas. Christmas Eve was when I got the good news I was going to be sent on this course, and that had started way back earlier when the sergeant major's motorcycle was in trouble. And I think I mentioned that earlier, didn't I?
Christmas dinner, was it special? Was it a special occasion for troops?
It was the only day they didn't burn the stew.
And you were waited on, presumably, by officers and NCOs in the usual traditional way?
I think so, yes. I can't remember very much about it because I was on duty on Christmas Day, so I didn't sit down with the rest of the men.
You've mentioned your training course that you were sent on. Could we discuss that? What kind of things you were doing there? What were you learning?
Yes. In the first instance, there were about 20 of us sent on this course.
Where was it to, by the way?
It was to Manegatons of Norwich. They were the Rolls-Royce and Bentley agents in Norwich. And the instructors were tip-top people. When I say they knew their job, they certainly did know their job. There was no sort of bypassing that. So I got on very well with them from day one because I was basically a theory person as well as practical. I had read so much about motorcycles and car engines and I understood so much of what was being said, where a lot of the chaps, they seemed as though they just knew so much. When it came to firing order of cylinders, it took some of them an awful long time to understand why, and this sort of thing. During the tea breaks, I used to talk to the instructors, and they would talk to me. It was no trouble for them. We would stand and drink our tea and discuss various things, possibly that we'd been getting trained for during the course. Now, the course was supposed to be 10 weeks, but regrettably, after 9 weeks, we were recalled.
Was it stripping engines, or did that do
anything? Yes. The principles of the engineering, A, was one of the things. Fault finding was another thing. We had to be able to file and precision. We had to be able to fit bearings, which, of course, you'd only do behind the lines. You wouldn't have to do it in a forward area. You were never allowed that sort of time. Electrical fault finding, yes. We were taught to tow, the correct procedure for towing. It was a very compact course, and we got lots of notes to write up, which I did. Actually, I led them to one of my trainee mechanics years afterwards, never got them back.
Did the when you'd completed the course successfully, did that mean anything in the way of additional money on your pay or promotions?
Not at that stage. We were recalled, as I said. Now, during that week leading up to our recall, different men out of different regiments, but all from the 49th Division, were being recalled. And we kept saying that it'll be our turn next. And, of course, the Saturday morning, we were taking the electrical exam. And during the course of the exam, somebody came into the room, and I saw him give a note to the instructor, and they went. And I had a feeling that was our recall, and it was. And we had to rejoin our regiment down on Salisbury Plain.
So he'd moved, the regiment had moved.
It had moved in our absence.